I need to figure out a way to come to the U.S. Like, there's just so many opportunities.
Talk about the mindset it takes to be a successful tech founder.
You just fake it till you make it. You sell them the dream, and then you figure out how to actually build the dream.
Jan Bednar founded a technology logistics company called Shipmunk, which he scaled to more than $350 million in annual revenue. Tim Grover, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan's coach, he said, winning doesn't make you heartless, but it makes you use your heart less.
You don't make the best decisions under stress.
What do people get wrong?
The biggest thing is just really trying to build for the customer, understanding what customers really need, because a lot of people end up building products for themselves.
What did you learn about what it took to scale companies?
Understanding who you are and then hiring people that will fit that style is super important. Otherwise, you're going to waste a lot of time. The hardest thing is to find people that actually want to solve problems.
Now that you've exited your company, how has that transition been? What is up, guys? Welcome back to the World Class Podcast. Today, I sit down with Jan Bednar. Jan is a Czech immigrant who moved to America when he was 16 years old to pursue his American dream. He founded a technology logistics company called Shipmunk, which he scaled to thousands of employees and more than $350 million in annual revenue. And in this conversation, we follow Jan's story from a bootstrapped entrepreneur through having a massively successful exit. We talk about the mindset of what it takes to be a world-class entrepreneur, as well as what it takes to have a holistically successful life. Jan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I'm so excited for this, man. So I want to set it up like this. You have accomplished a lot by 32. You've built a company with thousands of employees. You took it to $400 million in revenue, one of the most successful logistics technology companies in the world. I want to understand a bit of the context of how you got here, how you created this person. So take me back to when you were 16, still in the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. You hadn't yet come to America, but you had a dream kind of building up inside you. Like, take me back to what was going on. What was your mindset like? And what was your vision at that point in life?
Yeah. So I've always wanted to build stuff, right? Like, I was very wired to always be creative, entrepreneurial. I always wanted to build my own thing. Like, never wanted to really kind of join like the corporate ranks and do that. So when I was 16, I still played hockey. I actually was just ending my hockey career, and I kind of wanted to like get a little bit more serious about what I'm going to do in the future. I never imagined at that point to go in the States. And really what switched was, you know, I did like a language course in the States for 2 weeks, and I came back and it kind of opened my eyes. Like, I was, you know, up until that point, like, I just went, you know, was a normal kid going to high school, like played hockey, like nothing crazy. And then when I came back, I was like, man, there's so many opportunities in the States. Like, when I came to Fort Lauderdale for 2 weeks, and I was just blown away. I came back and I was like, I told my parents, I'm like, I need to figure out a way to come to the US. Like, there's just so many opportunities. And just, you know, it's one of those things where you realize that when you know you have to do something and like where you belong there, that was kind of that drive. And so, you know, I went back and I just had to figure out a way to come here. And then that's what put me on that path ultimately.
Did you, so by 16, you knew you wanted to be an entrepreneur, but you didn't know what you wanted to do yet? Or what?
Yeah, I think very early on, because my dad was an entrepreneur, and I had a couple entrepreneur like friends around me, not like my peers, but like older people that were, you know, had their own businesses. Like, they weren't huge businesses, but they were just like their own bosses. And just, there's something about that. It was kind of a naive view of entrepreneurship. Like, I just thought, like, you know, you don't really work. You have other people work for you, and then you just go on vacations and money comes in. Like, that was kind of the view of what that means, but it really obviously couldn't be far away from what the difference. But I think that level of freedom of like being your own boss and then being really responsible for your success, building your path, was really what was kind of driving me towards doing that. And really, like, just not, you know, I was never too good at like compromising with others. And then, so I wanted to be my own boss. And so that was kind of a, you know, just made things easier when you don't have to ask for, you know, is this how this should be, or this is kind of how we're going to do it.
That's such a like common character trait, I feel like, of entrepreneurs, is like, there's some sort of problem with authority, or like you hate being told what to do. You're like, I feel like I could do it better.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just got to do it my way. So when you came to the US, you were 16, right?
I was 17. Just 17,
yeah. So walk me through the point from where you're 17 coming to the US to where you first get your idea for Shipmunk. What was that process like?
So when I first came, you know, I was in high school. I was doing like, I was going to school every day. I was playing hockey. And right in the beginning, I mean, there was kind of a pretty popular business model at the time where a lot of people from Czech wouldn't be able to buy products in the States, but there were a lot of products that, you know, were pretty popular. Like Abercrombie was a big brand, right? Victoria's Secret, all these brands we know in the States back in the day, like were super popular, but you just couldn't get them. They didn't have stores. They wouldn't ship to Czech. And so my first kind of business model was, you know, I was buying all these products. I was selling them to my friends in Czech. And really basically arbitraging the, you know, the cost, even Apple products, you know, like there's still
just until flipping this day, iPads still, and
yeah, I was selling like iPads, iPods, like everything, you know, iPhones. And it was like, it was a hustle, hard kind of model,
Gary
but it was like
hustle.
A perfect, I mean, it was a perfect model to kind of get an understanding of e-commerce, get an understanding of like really market dynamics. And, you know, it was like a good extra beer money when I was in school, and that business I was doing up until, I actually ended up selling that business in 2016 or 17. So I was actually after graduation, that was the first business that I was doing full time. In between, I had a little gigs that like I launched something, didn't work out, scraped it, learned, you know, just one of those things. But Shipmung itself, the idea I got was in 2015 when I started doing this first business full time. And this guy called me on the phone, and I picked up, and he's like, "Hey, like, you know, I read about you in the newspapers. It was some like college newspaper or something wrote about us. Like, we won the business plan competition." And this guy, you know, he says like, "Hey, can you do our fulfillment?" And I'm like, "What the hell is fulfillment? Like, I have no clue. But let me just look into it." So I literally was Googling it as he was telling me, like, you know, we have a company. We just launched it in Fort Lauderdale. We're going to be selling smart home products. This was kind of when IoT was getting big. And, you know, and we need somebody to store it and ship it. And I was like, well, I mean, I have a warehouse. I know how to ship products. Like, that sounds pretty easy. Like, I don't know why you're going to me, but we'll figure it out. And so I got off that call. I started a lot of research and was asking kind of the typical questions like, how big is this market? Why is he coming to me, not somebody else? You know, what like, how big could this be? Is this a bigger opportunity of what I'm doing right now? And I was a big, like, I get very, as a typical entrepreneur, you just get excited about everything. And,
yeah,
you know, and like, you never feel like you're growing fast enough. That was kind of that, like, my business was growing at the time and it was doing okay, but like, I still felt like there's more that can be done. So I hopped on this. And what I realized is that there's a massive gap between, like, you know, there's a lot of these entrepreneurs that are starting to open their Shopify stores and selling online. And then nobody to kind of service that market because nobody wants to work with small businesses in logistics because it's so much overhead managing one client. And all the solutions that were on the market were for larger clients, maybe one or two companies doing like something for smaller customers. And so I said, well, you know, there's got to be a way to build tech and some sort of a solution to really service these guys and help them grow and really manage their logistics. And so we started building the tech that would allow us to do it, went to a couple of trade shows to really just gauge the market, and, you know, started hustling and selling. Like, I was dialing, I bought a, you know, list for $50. I went to my college buddy from my macroeconomics class, and I was like, this guy would like literally be able to sell anything. And I was like, hey, here's the list, and started dialing. And, you know, we were just like in this little office, the size of like this desk, and no AC, just sitting in the warehouse, had like a list of
just
like,
a little boiler room.
Boiler room, like 1,000 random calls. Names. And like every day we would just dial these guys. And like, yeah, we started closing deals. We were promising a lot of stuff we just could not deliver on. But I feel like that's just part of the play. Like, you just fake it till you make
it. The play on the way down, right?
And like, you just like, you sell them the dream and then you figure out how to actually build the dream. And that was kind of that was the idea, right? And so we made a lot of mistakes. Not that we don't make mistakes today, but like, I think early on, I think that's like the part of that innovator mindset is like so important, where you, you know, you start with like, this is what I want to sell you. And it doesn't always have to necessarily be there, but then you kind of reverse engineer like, okay, well, how do I actually get there? I think a lot of people, when they become too experienced in whatever they know, they lose that beginner mindset and they overcomplicate things and they stop innovating because they will come up with 20 different reasons why something is not going to work.
Yep.
Like, if I knew what I know today, I would never start because it's just so complicated. It's so capital intensive. The market is so tight. Like, all these reasons that I was absolutely ignorant to at the time, you know, got like ultimately got me in the space. And everybody, by the way, all my mentors, all my friends were like, what are you doing? Like, this, like, you're going to be a warehouse company? Like, that's not exciting. Like, go do some tech stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Like, it's pretty basic, but there's big opportunity. And like, from what I can tell, nobody's doing it well. And I think those two things is like, big enough market, nobody's doing it well. I think those are just kind of the biggest qualifiers for an opportunity.
So I want to highlight that because so many people are trying to figure out what to build. They've got this like passion inside of them, like, where do I put it? Like what idea is worth pursuing? So just to highlight a few things. One, you had a problem that you identified because you'd traveled, you've been experienced, you saw what worked in one market, there was a gap in another market. So you figure out an arbitrage opportunity. You started out in services. You're flipping stuff, your services. You're not building tech yet because you haven't demonstrated yet that you can service the problem. So you started service, more manual. Then you're like, okay, there's got to be a way to create leverage here and actually build technology to solve this at scale. Right. But now as you're cranking out, selling the dream, you're cranking out calls, you got some customers. Now you're trying to figure stuff out. Were you technical? Like, how did you start building the product and how did you actually get it off the floor?
Yeah. So I would say I was pretty technical. Like I wasn't a coder or a developer. I had a vision of what the products should do. I didn't know how to build them. And so, I think you would appreciate this from a talent perspective, but you know, I because we were bootstrapped, I didn't have any money to hire anybody. I always kind of go with my Czech background. Like I created a job posting in like a Czech university because it's got a pretty good reputation for talent. Yeah. And I posted this job and it said, you know, we're looking for like an American Czech startup is looking for a head engineer. Like we don't really have money to pay you, but we'll pay you for your trip to the US and you're going to like do like a free unpaid internship with room and board. And then like, you know, you'll be part of this amazing experience. Right. And posted it on the college board and didn't realize like how many people are going to apply. I think we had like 70 or 80 people from the university apply. I interviewed them and, you know, one guy that I ended up liking a lot. And I mean, that was literally the only evaluation tool I had. Like I couldn't really test them for engineering.
You're like, I grab a beer with this guy.
Yeah. Like, I like this guy. And you know, it's very hard. Like I think the engineering co-founder is so crucial and critical for success of the company. And like looking back, right? Like, you know, we've hired over, I don't know, 200, 300 developers across the lifetime of the company and maybe a little less, but I don't think there's, you know, there's maybe one, two other people out of all of those people that we've hired that could have been like that I imagine ever being my co-founder. And so what I'm trying to say is I got super lucky with this guy because he wasn't a typical engineer. Like he had a pretty strong business sense and, you know, that's why the two of us work so well together. And so he came over for an unpaid internship. You know, it didn't really, and it was the, you know, the pictures of the beach. And I told him like, you're going to just not really, you know, we're going to be like just chilling, having a good time.
Right.
And I still joke with him today. Like that 3 months he was here, he did not see the beach at all. Like,
we're just you're always selling the dream though.
For sure. I always sell it. Like, this is what it's going to look like. Yeah. And, you know, and like, we're just locked in a room for 3 months building this product. And, I also joke with him. It was the last time he ever had a deadline because, now it feels like there's always a reason why engineers can't have deadlines, but you know, we built the first product in 3 months and then he left, then I got him a visa. He moved in, full time and, you know, became my CTO basically at the time. And so, he was the one that was kind of the technical brain behind it. And, you know, we started hiring some developers in Czech. Every time we could afford one, like more, we would just, you know, all the money we made were pretty much going to engineering. And I was selling and I had this other guy from my university that was helping me sell. And that was kind of the core. And, you know, and then started hiring some people in the warehouse and that was the beginning. But I think it's to your point about like operational leverage. I knew that the differentiator is always going to be, the tech piece, like actually allow us to do what we say we can do. And then really bringing extra value to the customer, which was through transparency, like inventory order management, speed, cutting costs, like all those things. You know, at the time it just didn't exist. And so those were all the big kind of priorities that we're focusing on.
I think one of the big things to highlight is you started with the problem. I feel like so many people start with the tech.
Yeah.
Or like, they're like, I can build some badass tech, but like you had a clear problem. There was clear demand because people were inbounding you looking for something. But you were like, how do I just solve this problem better than everyone else? Talk about the mindset you think it takes to be a successful tech founder. Like, what do people get wrong? And what mindset did you have going into things that you feel like made you successful?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just really trying to build for the customer. Like whatever you're building, like you have to build for your customers and really understand what their life is like and what the journey is. Like our product is kind of two, like we look at the product in two different ways. One is internal product, which is for the warehouse management system, which we use inside of our buildings to drive like to you know, pick orders and move product and do inventory and all these things. And that part of the product is like your team is the customer, right? And so that's one like area. And then the other one is the external for the customers, which is more inventory management, order management, billing, and all these things. And understanding what customers really need, because I think a lot of people end up building products for themselves. Like they think this is what the customer wants without truly understanding and like living in their shoes. So like really, and to your point, like then they end up building a bunch of features. And we've done that too, you know, on a couple of occasions where you just end up building something that you think your customers want and then nobody ends up using it. And there is a fine line between, you know, innovation and what customers think they need, because a lot of the times they don't really know what they want.
Right.
So you also can't just purely be asking your customers, because sometimes you have to think outside of the box and be like, hey, maybe this is what we want to build, but to always get the feedback from the customer to try to build something that like really matters and really helps them. And then more like, it's kind of basic, but like just measure it, like know what that, like, what are you trying to solve? How do you measure whatever you're trying to solve? And then make sure that you're actually solving it. Cause then people end up like coming up with new metrics and, you know, like you want to make sure that like the impact that in any business, right? Like you're trying to ultimately help customers be better, and like, yeah, just put a metric to it and make sure you measure it, whether it's cost, whether it's speed, whether it's whatever. Yeah. Those are all the,
yeah,
the
key things. I want to talk a little bit more tactically about what you learned, because you're young, you're like 25, 26, scaling this big company. You probably never had a lot of leadership experience, right? You're just kind of figuring shit out on the fly, right? So what did you learn about what it took to scale companies, and how did you have to evolve as a person to step into that bigger role?
Yeah. So I was lucky to have a really good kind of like advisory board and people around me that helped me through my leadership journey. You know, I would say kind of like my personality is very, like, I'm very passionate about things. Sometimes that passion can come across as aggressiveness, because I really care about what I do and I don't have a lot of patience. And I think those are all really good virtues for entrepreneurs, but not always the best for when you work for somebody with those virtues, right? And so I think a big thing for me was understanding my weaknesses, and not just like, you know, am I good with numbers, or am I good with marketing, or am I good with, you know, sales? Like, I think understanding like your skills is very important, but also understanding who you are as a person and being aware of your weaknesses in terms of like what would make somebody not want to work with you, or why do people get kind of motivated or not motivated? And so for me, like, that was A, understanding like the area of the business that I really wanted to spend time on, which is operations, sales, I was spending a lot of time on, and finance. I think I'm really strong like in finance and accounting, and that helped me early on to build a bootstrap business, because I really cared about every single dollar that came into the business route. But more importantly, I also understood that, like, you know, I can get very passionate. And so every time I started to get like, you know, started to yell at people, I was like, I need to check myself. I'm like, okay, Jan, like, this is, you're gonna fuck this up. This person's gonna be upset. And look, I also then modified my hiring. Like, I knew I can't hire people that like can take pressure, because in a building, you know, when you're building a startup, like you don't want to worry about, you know, people get very sensitive these days about like everything. And and like, you don't have time as a founder to be like worrying that like you told somebody like, hey, this sucks, and like that person is now
take it personally,
sad and taking personally, or you know, I'm not very good at like telling people that they've done a great job, because I tend to focus on deficiencies. And so my mindset is like, okay, like you've done a great job, but like, let me tell you what you did wrong so we can fix that. Right. And like, a lot of people don't take that well, because I don't tell them that they've done this well. I'm like, hey, let's fix that problem.
Yeah.
Instead of me going to them and saying like, you've done an amazing job. So that is one area that I've been working on consistently.
Yeah.
And you know, like the early founding team, like especially people that are kind of co-founders or have early equity, they're so bought in, like, you know, they just understand that it's part of the startup world to go through these challenges, and they don't think things personally, because you get so close. You know, we lived together the first couple of years, like the three co-founders. So like, we were like just very, very tight. And so we could tell each other anything, but not everybody is wired the same way. And so it created some bad situations where, you know, just like people just can't take the stress, or they feel like it's not worth it. And that's totally normal. But I think just understanding who you are and then hiring those kind of people that will fit that style is super important. Otherwise, you're going to waste a lot of time for yourself and for the people you're hiring.
I feel like what you just said is like half of the success of a startup. It's just getting the right people on the team, but first having the awareness of like, what qualities do we need? Do I have to embody? Because you're right. When you have people that are a bit too soft, or they can't handle that pressure and stress, you can have so much internal riff and it slows you the hell down. But I feel like being clear on just getting people, I think when you're saying, hey, here's a deficiency, it's not personal, but it's out of love, because you're on a common mission together for greatness. And so you're like, it's coming from love, because like, I'm holding you to a higher standard, because this is what I know we can do together. But not everyone perceives it that way.
No, for sure. And then, like, I've always been super passionate about the success of the business. And like, you know, the way I think you build a successful business is like, you know, every single day, every single week, you look at who we are as a business. What are the things we're doing right? Let's double down on those. And then more importantly, what are the things we're doing wrong? And then let's fix them, right?
Yeah.
And like, that's the beauty of like, I think any founder needs to have a really strong problem solving skill set.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And identifying those problems and really focusing on fixing them is like, I love that. Like, I don't really care about what I'm doing right. Like, I need to know what I'm doing wrong so that I can get that better. And like, in a long run, you know, you just continuously get better if you continue fixing the problems, right? And like, you know, there were moments when we're growing, I think from like during COVID, we grew from like 60 million in revenue to like 140 in 1 year. And like, everything breaks around that time. So yeah. All you're doing is firefighting. And it's, you know, everybody tells you, it's kind of funny. It's like, everybody like tells you, you shouldn't be firefighting. Like, you need to step back and take a look at it. And like, yeah, it's great. Like in theory, in a PowerPoint presentation or on a podcast, but like the reality is like, you're literally, your company is like
it's on fire.
Crumbling down. Right? Yeah. It's on fire. Like, you've got customers orders and now going up. Like, people are getting misbilled. Like, all these things, that those are real implications. It's not, you know, it's different for a pure tech company. It's different for a company like us. Right. But like, you know, those are real things. And so you got to be solving them. Like, you can't just say like, oh, like I've read somewhere that I should be more high level, so I'm not going to help you solve this problem. And I feel that's, by the way, the hardest thing is to find people that I actually want to solve problems and do things.
Like, sorry, I'm the executive VP. I don't do that.
That's And it's like, I see this, cancer. And I see this everywhere. And as we get bigger, I see a lot of people, you know, a lot of people want to like hire big names from big companies and they, you know, like, oh, that person working at Amazon or at Shopify or whatever. Yeah, and it's like, they're great companies. But like the, you know, it's, if it's a VP at Shopify, that VP is not going to come and do a hands-on dirty work at your like 10-person company. It's just a completely different,
completely different
vibe, right? And so, you know, impressive names are cool, but like, I've never had a lot of success with hiring somebody from a like big name company that actually came down, roll up their sleeves and not never, but especially early on.
To that point though, because this is valuable for anybody building a business, I've hired close to 1,000 people and a couple hundred executives. The biggest mistakes I've made are hiring sexy pedigrees that look great on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
They make the papers, but you realize they've got the skill sets. Not only are they not hands-on enough, but they don't have the fire anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, for me, the number one rule, if you're building a startup team, is hire people with chips on their shoulder, with something to prove.
Yeah.
It could have been to prove the bully wrong when they were like 8 years old, their parents, or just to prove themselves right. But they have to, it's like life or death. You can't let your identity down.
Yeah.
It's like, you're totally tied to this outcome. You'll give your whole life to it. But that's a rare quality to find in people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, that's, I mean, you live in this world every day, right? Like, the way you assemble your team, it's just, it's, you know, you either make it or don't. And everybody talks about it. There's no easy formula. Like, you just gotta be quick in like, like, that's one of my biggest deficiencies, is like, I'm just not very quick on moving for people. I always want to give them a second chance. I was really slow. You know, my other co-founder, Kevin, who, you know, we've been working together for 7 years since the beginning, pretty much. Like, he's really, really tough. Like, he's the one that's like, gonna want to fire people even like before they show up to work on the first day. But you know, I think at some point you never regret the people that you move on like quick enough. You always regret the ones you don't move.
100%.
And you know, I think most companies like end up basically being like, they keep the talent for too long. And
because
there's the talent is just so limited and there's not a lot of amazing people. Like, you know, it's, I mean, again, over the last, whatever, 7 years, we've hired thousands of people. And I would say out of all those people that we've hired, like, you know, if I was to ever start another company, like, I would probably bring, I don't know, 20 people, 30 people from the ones that I work
that
with.
That really move.
That are like, they really move the needle, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good people, but like, the people that I just remember that, you know, I've always been impressed with, it's, you can literally count them, like, it's less than, probably less than 30.
You know, I know you just exited the company, so we'll talk about that in a bit, but looking back now over the last decade, we got 20/20 hindsight. If you had to go back and build it over again, like, what are the key things that you would have changed or done differently?
I'm not big on like looking in the past and trying to change it, because I feel like that's you know, just whatever mistakes were. I mean, if I was to like try to achieve a better outcome.
Yeah, let's say you wanted to achieve the same outcome in half the time, what would you have changed?
Well, I would have told, I mean, it's, a lot of it is kind of the market situation, which I don't think you control. Like, COVID was a massive boost for our business, right? So obviously that was uncontrollable, but that helped us dramatically, because the shift from retail to e-com and like that growth, right? So that I don't think I could have accelerated. I mean, I think the the number one thing definitely would have been move quicker on talent. Don't give people too much of a chance because they're not going to, once they let you down, like there's unlikely they're going to completely like change their perspective on it. That's definitely one. The second, I would say, you know, it's like, I always look at this and you look at our growth and like, we, you know, we've gotten to a pretty large size very quickly, but I would say there was definitely moments where I felt like we weren't pushing hard enough or weren't, you know, growing too fast. So I think maybe sometimes doubling down on growth, would have been probably like, we also just, you know, we didn't raise venture money. So we didn't like just spend super money on customer acquisition. We always spend the money that we made to, on acquisition. And I think that's worked really well for us. We could have been more aggressive, but I don't think that's a huge regret. I think, the other one was maybe invest more in product. I was the main product guy for a long time and I did not have a product team. Like we had product managers in our kind of tech team, but they were more like order takers instead of solution.
You waited a little too long to delegate that function.
Yeah. And so I would have probably, you know, cause we are a product led company and we always think through the lens of the customer and how do we solve problems both internally and externally.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think building out that team of like really smart people, they don't like honestly need a lot of like practical experience from specific industry, but just like you put a smart person, you tell them like, hey, you own, you know, receiving and billing and go understand every single detail of that problem area and then come back to me and tell me like what we should build from a tech perspective too. Because as the company gets bigger, you start losing touch with a lot of the problems the company has because you just can't see everything. You don't read every single ticket. You don't have that pulse. And so having the right people that are responsible for an area of the business from a product perspective, even in a non-software company, by the way, like product is not always just software, right? Like
it's the service or product,
the service or the product or anything else. Yeah. And so, you know, having a person responsible for an area sooner and understanding everything around that area, I think could have probably driven more like better solutions towards the problem.
You brought up this concept over and over. It's just building a business is just problem solving at the end of the day. Yeah. If we were to drop the most basic fundamental thing, it's just solving problems. As you scale, you're just solving bigger problems and delegating other problems down, right? Were there any like existential crises, like, or what was the biggest like, oh shit moment? Cause I feel like this, greatness is about how you handle adversity, right? Some people hit their ceiling, they hit their stress threshold and they go back to their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Others break through it. The world class break through it. So what was one of those moments for you where it's like, oh shit, this is,
yeah, you know, this is, I mean, the great, you know, the mental health piece is a really interesting topic. I mean, we could be here and talk about that for a while. Like I've never had issues like getting close to a burnout. Like I'm just somehow like, I'm a little bit of a psycho. Like I don't get like my stress. I can handle stress really well.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I think I actually enjoy like being stressed because it gives me that opportunity to solve whatever I'm being stressed about. Right. And so in our business specifically, there's a lot of stress because, you know, we're managing people's physical products. You know, we have a lot of people in a lot of buildings all over the world. And there's like a million different like mini transactions that happen every single day. And for them to happen right, even if you have the best software in the world, like there's a lot of human error. There's a lot of, you know, people have different motivations. And so there's a lot of issues that you have to kind of solve. And I mean, there's been countless moments when I was really stressed. And I mean, I can give you an example where, you know, back in, I don't know, the 2017 or 18, like, we opened our second warehouse in California, hired, you know, a local guy, to run it. And I, you know, and we started having a lot of issues, like a lot of delayed orders and I wasn't there. I was here. And so at some point I was like, I need to just fly there and figure out what the hell's going on. Cause the guy on the call on the phone is like, yeah, everything's fine. We got under control. And I'm looking at the numbers. I'm like, it's not under control. You're 4 days late on shipping orders and like you're losing inventory. Like what is happening? And I get to the world, to the building and, you know, it's a 30,000 square foot warehouse and like literally, you cannot see the floor because of how many pallets and product is all over the floor, right? Which that means like they spend every single day they get to work and they spend the first 2 hours of the workday moving everything outside so they can even get to the product that's like in the racks or in shelves to then start picking and actually processing orders. And like that's 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours at night. Like you only have like 4 hours to work. And then I was like, this is like game over. Like we, you know, and then we still have more stuff coming in and it's a very basic, like fundamental, you know, planning, production planning type exercise where, you know, you know how much slave you got coming in, how much you have sitting, but we were in that sophisticated time. And so I had to, within like 3 days, I need to find a new building, start moving everything in the new building, try to like salvage this because I knew like half my business was in that warehouse. And if, and I was getting to a point where, you know, I would stop shipping and like all these customers would leave and I would, you know, I would, the business would die. And so we ended up within 3 days, we ended up getting a new warehouse. We ended up moving everything over. You know, when we moved everything over, like systematically, physically the warehouse was empty, and systematically we had like 100,000 units of inventory still in that building. Wow. Right. And we're like, fuck. And, you know, and now we have to go find it. And like, it was, you know, and you feel so alone, like, because the people that work for you, you know, except maybe the co-founding team, like nobody's living, like really understanding how that feels, because it's something you build, right? Like you promise these customers you're going to deliver on a service and you're failing.
Yeah.
Like that is really bad. And in this business that happens a lot. And so, but like, you know, you pick up, you get better. You ultimately end up fixing it. We're finding the inventory, and like, you just, you know, it's a lot of manual work. You have to push through it. And like, you know, I can think of 10 moments like that throughout the journey. And a lot of people that maybe have a little bit easier of an inclination or can't manage stress that well, like they would have probably quit. And I think that's what separates. And look, not every business is like that, right? But
sure.
But it is for a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, handling stress is a massive topic. And
yeah.
And sometimes like the harder you are, you know, and it doesn't always, like, I'm not saying you should be stressed and like, you know, that, but it's part of the job. And so, you know, handling it and finding the outlet of it, it's working out or exercising, or, you know, for me, it's working out and movies. Like that's like, I come home at like 11 PM and I watch a movie and it's like, I turn off.
Yeah.
It's like my, like relaxation of my brain.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of the things that, you know, I think helped us, but it's definitely not for everybody.
Do you think that resistance or tolerance for stress, is that inherent genetically in your DNA, or is it something you can train and cultivate?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's definitely a genetic component. Like my wife gets stressed like with every little thing, and you know, like I'm sure she can get better and like not maybe care as much about certain things and not get stressed.
Yeah,
but you'll never ever get her to like my level because
right.
like not stressing, because a lot of it is personality,
how you're wired.
A lot of it is genetics. It's like how you're wired. And, you know, she's a lot more empathetic. So she's a lot better with people because she, you know, she feels like how they feel. Right. For me, like I'm like, because of how I look at the world and because of how I handle stress, like I don't always understand people's emotions the same way she does, because like when you start crying, she starts crying, right?
Yeah, it's
like,
she's so empathetic. And I love, you know, Tim Grover, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan's coach. He said, winning doesn't make you heartless, but it makes you use your heart less.
Yeah, that's good.
Because you have to compartmentalize your emotions and not let them cloud you. Because when you're inside of an emotion, you're experiencing a distorted version of reality.
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to compartmentalize it. Like, all right, I feel 100%. The feeling, I'm going to observe it. Yeah. But like, I've got something to get done here.
Yeah.
How the fuck are we going to do it?
Yeah, yeah. And you don't make the best decisions under stress, right? Like sometimes the best decision that you can make at that time is to just take a step back, take a breath, and, you know, and just like make the decision tomorrow, because it's the same with people. It's the same with, you know, whatever problems you're doing, because like emotionally you get so, I get rallied up when I get upset, because I get upset relatively easily. I don't get like emotional in terms of just understanding people's emotions. But, you know, I think it all kind of comes together. And again, like having somebody on my team that has a very high EQ, super always important, right? Because like my head of HR is super empathetic person. And, you know, I would bring him into all of my meetings because I just wouldn't, you know, I just couldn't read people the same way. And
yeah, that self-awareness is key, because you can easily build an ego, be like, I'm the man, look at what I built, right? And you start thinking you just know everything. But I think that it's this simultaneous ego of like, I know I can solve this problem better than anyone in the world. Like I am the man. At the same time, I'm humble enough to know what I don't know and get the right people around.
I think that is, by the way, like the biggest, you know, what do you call this? Like the like,
dichotomy kind of thing.
It's a super dangerous thing for founders that have had a little bit of success to think they know everything, because it's like the, you know, you always should be so humble, because like, I mean, it's the typical saying, like the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And that's, I think, truth in, you know, anything. And I think you can be more confident in making decisions, but you know, just people don't want to work for a dick, right? Like you kind of have to be like, you have to, and that's the thing. It's like, and there's a difference, by the way, between like when I say I'm not empathetic, that doesn't mean like I'm an asshole to people. I mean, I can be, but I don't mean it in a bad way. Right. Like it's like, absolutely. Hey, like it's, we need to solve this problem. You're not really solving it right now. And there's a way to communicate better and like work on your tone and a lot of those things.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the effectiveness of that solution, by the way, you know, you can debate what's more effective. Like sometimes yelling at a person is more effective than like telling them nicely, right? But it depends on the person.
Right.
If they're very sensitive, like, you know, they're probably going to quit, right? If they're strong and they can take it, like they were maybe an athlete that like the coach was yelling at when they were kids, like
modulate,
it might actually help them like drive more. And, you know, and so all those variables are ultimately what makes leading people so hard. And it, you know, you need to adjust it to a situation and the type of personality. And so that's, but it's exciting because you just learn.
It's a dynamic puzzle.
Yeah.
You're constantly solving.
Exactly.
So I want to get a little more personal because you just had a year exit. You took secondaries out, made some great money. It's kind of the dream for all entrepreneurs, right? Either have your public offering, have your liquidity event, go live your dream life. But as founders, our companies are babies, right? That we pour our lives into them. Our identities get attached to them. And so I'm curious for you, now that you've exited your company, like how has that transition been? Like what's that process been like for you? Has it been everything you thought it'd be, or did it come with some challenges?
Yeah, I mean, I've had enough founders in my life that have kind of left companies that I've had a good kind of idea of what's going to happen or like what people go through. And some people get very depressed. Some people love that they left. Like there's just a lot of different stories. So I don't think there's one formula that kind of works for everybody or one experience. That for me personally, you know, I just recently, about 6 months ago, I brought in a CEO and I'm still involved in the business. Not obviously as a CEO. And it took me that process of looking for a CEO was a 2-year process. So I've kind of been like in my mind, I've been, you know, looking for a replacement for 2 years. So I had a lot to process, but after my exit, or partial exit in 2021, you know, it became like, it's kind of like everything that you ever wanted to achieve, you suddenly get there. It's like the mountain you want to climb and you get to the mountain and you realize like, cool, it's great. Like, I love it here, but like what's next? And I think that is, you can't really describe it because it makes no sense, right? Like you have all this money, you can buy anything you want, but there's a little bit of that kind of purpose that you lose, especially if you made your business career around that one particular goal. And so that was a really tough thing for me. It took me like a year to really figure out like, okay, well, gotten it to this point, like there's more in life than what I just did. And like, let's figure out like, what is my next mission or my next goal or my next kind of purpose, right? Because that is really, really challenging. Because for 8 years, my only purpose was wake up in the morning, grind and build this company, get it to a certain point, right? And then suddenly you get there and you're like, whoa, it's not that great. And I bought all the toys and all this stuff. And, you know, you realize like, it's not really fulfilling. And, now don't get me wrong, there's a lot of fun in having that lifestyle, but you know, but you still miss a little bit of that substance in your life. And so I think part of that is understanding yourself and what you want in the future, and surround yourself with people that you can talk to about your feelings, your emotions, and it's a, you know, it's not easy to like, because nobody feels bad for the guy that just exited the company. Like it's kind of a
like for you.
Exactly. And so, you know, but, and also like, well, like I got, when I exited, right, the market, like it was 21, right, right after COVID, the market was an all time high. Like everything was super expensive. Inflation was at, you know, 8, 9, 10%. And like, you know, you don't know anything about investing. Your money is basically losing value every single day.
Yeah.
You're running a company, you're trying to manage your investments. Like it is a little bit stressful and overwhelming.
Yeah. Do you feel underwhelmed now? Cause you don't have the same stress.
No, I don't feel underwhelmed, but I feel more in control. You know, it's like when you start a company and like, you have no clue what you're doing. It's overwhelming because you don't know what gap accounting means. And like, you don't know how to sell, like, you don't know what software to use. Like, there's like all these things that, and now it's like, I don't, by no means, I'm an expert in investing or in managing my investments, but like, I feel a little bit more in control and understanding how the dynamic works and the different like people that kind of play in that world and just makes me feel a little bit more comfortable, you know?
What's been the best part about having significant sums of money? Has it been the toys? Has it been the security for you? Like now that you're there, what's the best part about money? And maybe what wasn't it that you thought it would be?
Yeah, I think, well, I definitely think it's like the ability to be able to do what you want, where you want, with who you want, and for how long you want. And that, I didn't really have it until relatively recently with Josh coming on board, because I was running the business. Maybe that was also part of kind of what was killing me, because I always wanted more freedom. It's kind of like you grinding for 9 years, you know, you want a little bit more time for other things. And, you know, as a CEO, like you just, like everybody looks up to you, so you can't really do that. So now it's like having more time and, you know, I'm a workaholic, but I also love enjoying my life and my time. And I'm
absolutely,
I put a lot of value, on sharing that with my friends and with others around me. And so like some of the most amazing experiences, or what gives me most pleasure is creating amazing experiences and bringing my friends along so that like we all can have an amazing time, right? Whether it's, you know, taking the boat out or doing a safari trip or like whatever it is, it's just, and I'm a big believer in like living your life to the fullest. Yep. And so I can work really hard, but then I also want to have fun. Like whether it's, you know, going out, like Miami obviously is like some of the most fun you can have. Right. But like also that, like, I don't want to do anything for too long. So like just compartmentalizing and diversifying the fun. So I think to your question, I think like being creative and allowing yourself to come up with like the stuff you really would enjoy to do and then doing it. And doing it with the people you love.
Yeah.
I think that's like the most amazing thing, right? And really upgrading your life in terms of you know, your experiences and other different people value different things, right? Like some people love shopping, so like they will spend money on clothing and fashion, right? Some people love outdoor. Like I love the outdoors. And so like I'm the happiest when I'm in the mountains. I wake up, I see the sunrise, I can get my morning coffee, like I play with my dog. Like those are things that don't cost money.
But isn't it so funny how we can be like, I got to go build a $1 billion company so that I can then have the freedom to hang out in the mountains when we could have done that a long time ago and been happy. Yeah. But there's something inside you where you, it's like, there's this story in The Alchemist where Santiago goes to this Moroccan prince and he's in his little kingdom thing. And he's like, I want to know the meaning of happiness. And he's like, all right, I'll show you the meaning of happiness. This guy named Melchizedek. He's like, here's 2 drops of oil and a spoon. He goes, I want you to walk around my palace and I want you to admire the beauty and come back with the oil and the spoon. So Santiago walks around the palace, comes back an hour later. He's like, that was the most beautiful, stunning thing I've ever seen. He looks at the spoon, the oil's gone. And Melchizedek's like, now you know the meaning of life. It's admiring the beauty of the world, but never forgetting the 2 drops of oil in your spoon. Mm. And the 2 drops of oil on the spoon is your purpose.
No.
It's your responsibilities. It's cultivating your gifts to become useful and of service to the world. And so you got to take in life and enjoy the magic, because if you're always building your company and you're not enjoying shit, what's the point? You missed out on the gorgeousness of life, right? But if you're just seeking pleasure all the time, if you're on the boat too much or you're on 25 safaris a year, like you're not contributing to the world.
Yeah.
And so that balance, that harmony, I think is the key.
Well, so, I mean, it's a great point, right? So although I love to be in the mountains and I love to do these sunrises, right? Like that's great for a couple of days a year. You know, like the moment that becomes my lifestyle, like, you know, I might as well just, you know, put like a shaman hat and like go, you know, sell like rocks. Like I think there is, and there's a lot of people that love that life. Right. Yeah. And so I don't judge it, but I think for me, it's the diversity of what I can do, because I get bored super easily with everything I do. Yeah. And so I want to have the ability to go race cars. I want to have the ability to go and do like, you know, a nonprofit work in South America and build, you know, I don't know, like housing for people. And I want to be able to contribute financially, but also my time. I want to be able to build another business. I think when you're building a business, you're like 100% focused. And this was kind of when I was growing up too. Like 100% of my free time I spent playing hockey and I didn't do anything else. And same with the business. Later towards the business, I realized like I need to put more value in enjoying this journey, because I was loving the journey. When I was building a business, it wasn't like I was struggling and then like I was hoping for this outcome, right? It was, I loved every single second of that journey. And then, you know, I knew that like, I'm never going to live through what I lived through in the early days and like the grind and, you know, all nighters and all that stuff. But it just, I knew that that path leads to another experience where, you know, I can give an amazing life to my kids. I can, you know, I can travel anywhere I want. And so those are the things that I just really enjoy. And, you know, I think that is really the reason for, the best thing about money is like that freedom to do what you want.
I'm curious.
And most people are not very good at, by the way, spending money. Like, And what I mean spending money, like it doesn't, like I'm not talking about getting a $30,000 table at Live, right? Like what I mean is like actually consciously understanding what makes you happy, and then using money as a tool. And so using it for whatever makes you happy. Because for some people, that table at Live may be like the thing that gives them most pleasure, right? But I think most people actually don't take the time to think about it, because I meet a lot of miserable people that have a lot of money and they don't know what to do. And I think that's kind of the beauty of like taking some time to think about it, reflect, journal, whatever. Yeah. Like those are all powerful tools.
I think this is such an important thing to talk about too, because every entrepreneur I know is money motivated, right? There's this dream of making a shit ton of money because you think it's going to give you a certain feeling after, right? But we're so bad at measuring how we feel based on outcomes. Usually we get the outcomes, we're like, oh shit, that wasn't it.
Yeah.
And I feel like with money in particular, since it is a tool, it's just a magnifier, right? If you can't be happy with $1 million, you're not going to be happy with 100 million.
100%.
There's no way.
Yeah.
It's just going to magnify your life and bring out more of who you are. If you were generous before, you're going to be even more generous.
Yeah.
But I feel like with money, it can either be used to fill your insecurities.
Yeah.
Like you see people that can't walk out of their house without being dripped out in Gucci.
Yeah.
Right. You're either just broadcasting your insecurities and using it to fill a void, or you're using it from love and purpose, like creating experiences with your friends or investing in amazing coaches so you can expand yourself faster. 100%. You know, like, so I think being aware of that, I hope people get to that point of self-realization before they have the exit you had.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think just like, and living and enjoying the journey, I think that is so valuable. Like the best moments, like when I'm with my, you know, my guys that I started the business, but like now when we have a drink or beer, like we, you know, we go back, we remember the moments when, you know, we didn't sleep for 3 days and try to fix the problem, like whatever those were. Like, I think people just end up too focused on that end outcome instead of enjoying that journey. And I think that's just crazy important. Because that's what it's about, right? Like sometimes it's going to take 30 years. And like, I think enjoying that and living through it is super important.
We got to romanticize, not the destination, but romanticize the mundane, crazy moments when we're just in the trenches together building.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's like a lot of stress. Like I don't miss, because one of the things that I try to optimize for now is, because there's definitely a lot of stressful moments that like, I don't have best memories, right? Like when a customer calls you that and tells you like they want to get out of the business. They want to, leave the best, like they want to churn basically. And like, now you think like, oh shit, like they're 10% of my business that's like gone. Like that could create a threat from the existential. Like there's a lot of these moments where you lose a key employee or, you know, like you have those moments that like really create a lot of stress for, I think, a lot of people. And most people want to avoid them, but I think, and that's what, like right now I'm in a phase of life where I try to optimize my life so I don't deal with those types of stresses. Right. But there's part of it where actually, appreciating those moments ends up, you know, valuing like that harmony and the peace that you have in the future.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah,
you know, like without those moments, you can't appreciate, calmness. So it's like sometimes it's good to embrace it. Then just be grateful for, you know, what you have and living with.
Earned peace.
Earned peace. Exactly.
I like that. Before I ask my last question, where can our listeners follow and engage with you online?
Instagram is probably easiest, Jan_and_chipmunk. Post my kind of personal life, LinkedIn. I don't do a lot of content, but you can follow me there too. Just Jan Bednar, JanBednar. Those are kind of the best two mediums.
Right. So for me being world-class, it's always pursuing your next level of growth. It might not be another business, but you're always pursuing expansion in life, right? You've accomplished an insane feat by 32. You have your whole life ahead of you still. As you look to your next level, what is your next adventure look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think without getting into specifics, because I really don't know, I definitely at some point want to build something again. Right now, my biggest focus is, we want to start building a family with my wife. So that's going to be like a big next project, that I'm pretty excited about. At some point building another business. Right now it's really making sure that like the transition to Josh is going to be successful and that the team is going to feel good. And, you know, like I still have a lot of, it's still my baby. Right. And so I want to make sure Chipmunk still continues to do really well. So it's not very specific, but I don't know right now. And I think I'm totally okay with it. And that's part of the excitement, is just keeping my options open, figuring out what that's going to be.
That's a beautiful answer, honestly, because most people think you just have to always have the next thing laid out. But sometimes that discovery process, that unknown, and being comfortable there and not having to jump to the next thing right away, just like let your soul kind of cultivate, just, you know, whatever it is. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great. And it's great to, you know, be just very lucky to be able to be in that position. And I love it. It's cool to not know, right? Like coming from a day where your calendar is like 12 hours of just back-to-back calls to, you know, it's like, hey, let me put some reflection time on my calendar so I can actually think about that stuff.
Yeah.
Super important.
I love it. Well, thanks, man. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you. I feel like you've got like a Richard Branson vibe going, like just like the entrepreneur that entrepreneurs want to be, you know, like you're clearly got world-class standards. You did some world-class things. You already had an amazing exit. You built a legendary company, but I like your approach to like living a holistically successful life.
Yeah. Rich has, by the way, always been my inspiration. And I got to meet him a couple years ago. And yeah, he's my favorite entrepreneur. And like, you know, he's that kind of epiphany of like, he's building amazing companies, but he's having a lot of fun doing it. So that's kind of what I want to be.
Yeah, that's a world-class life.
Yeah. Thank you.
I love it, man. Thanks for coming.
Cool. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the World Class Podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe across all our platforms. Hit that notification bell so you can get updates on our new episodes, and we'll see you next week.